listening to Season 6 of the Devoted Dreamers podcast, where we talk about our God-shaped dreams. I'm your host, Merit Onsa, and in this new season, I want more than ever to point you to God's truth to help you move from uncertainty to action in your God-shaped dream. We will begin each episode with stories of women just like you who have learned to listen to that still small voice of God, who have found the courage to take their next step and have trusted Him along the way. But you need to know that this show isn't about hustle or doing more, working harder, or being better. Nobody needs more of that. This show is about experiencing God's grace and learning His love for us in the midst of the labors, dreams, and ambitions He's given us, and all the challenges that come hand in hand with those. So whether you're starting out, or maybe even feeling like the years of dreaming are beginning to run out, whatever your dream and the doubts you're battling along the way, you need to know God sees you. And there's a beautiful passage in Ephesians 1 that I keep coming back to, where our gracious Father reminds you that you were created and chosen for a purpose, in order that you might live for the praise of His glory. So whatever might be standing in the way of your dream, whether that's something deep inside of you or something external, God has a plan for you, His daughter, and He is with you in it. And I pray that you will know those truths a little deeper today as a result of this conversation. You can always connect with me and the other listeners in my Facebook group or via my Instagram at MeritJO or as a patron of the show. Everything you need to know, including the show notes, can be found on my website at meritonsa.com. And now, here's today's episode. Hello, Devoted Dreamers. I am so thrilled to welcome you to the final episode of Season 6 here in December of 2019. And I'm recording this a little bit in advance, but I did not want to finish out this season without an opportunity to bring back a guest from Season 1, back when the podcast was called Momentum. So most of you listening probably have not heard her episode, but today I am talking to Kat Armstrong. She was on episode number 15. We talked about how sometimes your dreams just take too long to come to fruition. So I'm going to link to that episode in the show notes in case you want to go back and hear more from Kat from 3 years ago. But today she is a speaker, an author, a podcast host, the co-founder of Polished, which is a ministry that's equipping young professional women to share the gospel with their peers. And I first learned about Polished back when I lived in Dallas, Texas. And I'm just so excited to bring Kat on today. She has recently published a book called No More Holding Back, Emboldening Women to Move Past Barriers, See Their Worth, and Serve God Everywhere. And I know that you will be so blessed by this conversation today. So welcome, Kat. Thanks for being on the show again.
Merit, you are seriously one of my favorites. I remember that podcast number 15. I remember it as clear as day. Because we got really real in that conversation, and it's, you know, you and I are really connected through our dreaming and doing. We're really connected in that. We live in different places, like we don't get to talk often, but I feel a real kindred spirit. So thanks for having me back on the show.
Those are such sweet words, because I feel that too. I mean, I see you on social media, and I just said before we started recording, why has it been 3 years since I've interviewed you? But
I know, right?
I know. And I have to say, there is a post that you put up on Facebook. I mean, it could have been a year or more ago, but it was about this word Ezer in the Bible, and you asked women what the teaching on that word, how that has impacted them. And I read that and was like, what? No, clueless. Like, what does that even mean? I don't know what she's talking about. So I went and Googled, and then I read what some people had said to that post. And I don't know if you want to go into that at all a little bit, but it really impacted me, and I feel like would be something the listeners would benefit from hearing as well.
I remember that post distinctly, Merritt. It was a long time ago, and it was on Facebook because I was in the throes of book research to write No More Holding Back, and I wanted to get some feedback from folks because I had been introduced to the Hebrew word azer in, I think it was 2002. Well, no, it had to have been later, 2006 or seven, kind of in that time frame. I remember I was sitting on campus at Dallas Theological Seminary. I was in the library. I had pulled a book that had been recommended by Dr. Sandy Glahn, and it was by Carolyn Custis James, who is one of the first women to graduate from Dallas Seminary, PS. She's an innovator. She's a speaker. She's an author. She's a theologian. I'm an overall, probably her number one biggest fan. Like, no kidding. I own all of her books, had her sign them all, brought them all with me to an event. It was so embarrassing. So when I say I'm a fan, like, I'm a super fan. I remember Carolyn Custis James was speaking at Dallas Seminary a couple years ago, and my best friend, Tiffany Stein, at the time, she was booking all of the speakers. And I begged her, please let me give Carolyn a ride to the airport. And I totally did. Very stalkerish move, but I just want to build some context for, I'm a really big fan of Carolyn Custis James' theological work in the Old Testament, how she studies women of the Bible, and she's the one who introduced me to this word. In the Genesis narrative, you know, God says it's not good for man to be alone, and so he creates a helper suitable for him, and that's Eve. And I remember Carolyn talking about the Hebrew word for helper, and it's azer, E-Z-E-R. And then she went on to say that she studied that word in the Old Testament, and it comes up 21 times in the Old Testament. 16 of the 21 times, it refers to God himself. God is the helper. And so she went and looked up every time that word was used. What is God doing when he's helping people? Like, how do we become the helpers God designed us to be? And what she found is that in all 16 times when God is the helper, he's helping people in a military context. So there's war, it's a battle, it's on a battlefield, it involves an enemy, and God is the one who's helping people and he rescues them. And so she basically argues, and I totally agree with her, that the word helper, when God says we're going to make women suitable helpers for men, that there's something behind that, that it's not, we're supposed to be helpers like someone's admin assistant or really subversive, disgusting ways that women have been used to help. Like, remember the movie The Help that showcased, you know, African-American women being the help to white families and how disgusted we were at the way that they were treated. And so Carolyn basically says, look, when we hear the word helper, it's a super loaded word for women. And some of us imagine that means we're supposed to be the admin assistant to all the men in the world. Some of us, it means we think of it in a really negative way. But according to the Bible, the way we should help is the way God does. And he helps in this cosmic battle between good and evil. And so her thesis is that women were created to be helpers, and that word can be translated warrior. That we were designed to stand alongside of men, partner with them to build the kingdom, and that together we are going to be a strong force to fight evil. And so, as you can imagine, when I'm sitting in the library at Dallas Seminary, I'm just, tears are streaming down my face because I really wrestle with being a strong woman. I've got some sharp convictions. I'm an Enneagram 8. And I'm having a hard time figuring out how to be who God created me to be and also live within the structure the Bible provides for us as men and women. And I just couldn't figure out how it worked together until I read that. And so I had to do a whole chapter in my book about this word, and I give Carolyn all the credit. But I do it in my Bible study as well. So there's a Bible study and DVDs that go with the book. And the one whole week is devoted to just looking up every single time the word helper is used and to understand what the word means. But when I went to Facebook and said, you know, if you're familiar with Carolyn Custis James and her work on Azer, would you just tell me what it meant to you? And I'm sure you remember the feed was insane. It was like people were crying, like, this liberated me, this set me free. And yeah, I'm curious, like, when you looked it up, Merritt, what did you think? Like, what were you thinking when you were seeing the responses?
I mean, you're really taking me back to this, because, like, I think I was blown away. I became a Christian in Dallas, Texas, not the most,
liberal place.
No. though I grew up in California. And so I had this real battle within me of who am I as a woman, but also a Christian. And I'm super black and white in how I think about things. So it's like, well, I guess I can be a helper, like you said, administrative assistant to the men in my life or whatever. And that did, that is like a, like, okay, I want to be obedient to God in the Bible. And so if that is what he's saying, I'll try to figure that out. And it just never worked for me. And so to read that I know you. I didn't know all the people who were responding, but I guess by association, I had a lot of respect for those who were responding and very thoughtfully, and educated women, and saying to me, kind of third person a little bit, just like, it's okay to live in the strength that God made you with. And, that I don't have to become something that I'm not in order to follow Jesus. And so, I love that I didn't prep you for that, just so everyone out there knows. Like, I just put that out there. Answer this question, Kat, from 2 years ago or whatever it was.
I love it. Yeah. I know it was a really cool thread, because you're right. There were probably 5 or 6 PhD level women that fired back and said, I loved her research. This is how I've implemented it in my own ministry, in my own life. I've implemented it at work. We had licensed professional counselors saying, I bring this up to many of my clients who are wrestling as strong women, or it doesn't have to be strong, not like strong personality, just women who maybe feel a little bit self-confident in where God's leading them. Doesn't mean that the imposter syndrome isn't there, but that we feel purposed. And that doesn't even mean in the workplace. That can mean as a mom, it can mean as a widow, anything like that. But there were lots of women, different ages, stages, that all responded to that. And I think Carolyn Custis James research just really hit a nerve. And I love that it's so grounded in the scriptures. Like, it wasn't sociological, cultural context. It was just, where was this word used? What did it mean? So I really grabbed a hold of that. I love that word. It's on my keychain.
Well, and I love it when there's people who are smarter than me who have, they've actually studied the original language. because if I were to go look into it, it's like, well, I could make it whatever I want to, just in my own sinful nature. But to have somebody who says, oh no, I have done the work to come to this conclusion. And I mean, the Holy Spirit living in you, like, I would hope that if that was totally wrong, that the Spirit would be like, nope. But, I'm going to trust that and believe that God would not call me to administrative assistant. Nothing wrong with that. But that if my heart is wrestling with this and longing to understand, okay, I believe God created me for a reason, and what would that be? And that it is not to cower and hide. And he says that elsewhere, like, that we are to live in the light of Jesus and who he made us to be just by his death and resurrection, because we're his people, his children. And anyway, I love it. I have no idea if we can link to your Facebook post in the show notes, but if we can, that would be really fun to be able to share that. And thanks for going into it here with us. And I do love how it ties into your book. And I really do want to talk about that process for you of getting to the place of writing this book. So I don't know if at episode 15, if this book was on your radar at that point, or if it was just little percolations in your soul. Yeah, we've talked about a little on the research side. So what came next for you in writing No More Holding Back?
Yeah, I was just trying to think, Merritt. I'm like, was the book even in on my radar 3 years ago? It wasn't. It wasn't because there were a series of events that led to it. And I wonder if, you know, a bunch of your listeners are thinking about, should I write a book? Should I write curriculum? Should I self-publish? You know, I think that's a question a lot of us ask when we sense we have a message to steward. How do I do that well? Do I start a podcast? Do I start a ministry? And we talked a little bit about that on my episode in 15, you know, just how Polished came to be, this national organization now that I co-founded 11 years ago, and how, you know, how we decided, is this what we're supposed to do? So I think we're all trying to figure that out. But the book wasn't even on my radar then. It was three really distinct things happen. One, I remember being at a Camp Well event. My friend Jen Jett hosts this amazing boutique conference for dreamers and doers. And I was there and I was scheduled to speak and I delivered a sermon, and Jenny Allen happened to be there that day. And she pulled me aside afterwards. We didn't know each other at all. We knew of each other. And she came over and she just said, and Jenny Allen, only Jenny Allen can do this. Okay. She's got like these prophetic leanings where she calls things out of people and it's beautiful. But she said, why are you hiding? And I said, and we had no intro, no chit chat, no small talk at all. She comes to me and says, Kat, why are you hiding? And I said, Jenny, because it is safe here. It is safe here hiding. And she said, I want to hear more from you. Your voice is really important for our generation. And I don't know why I haven't heard more from you yet. And I said, because it's safe here. I just kept saying that. And so I had some time to process after that event. Wow, am I hiding any gifts that God's given me? And what a strange interaction to have. And months later, I heard from my other friend, Sharon Miller. She just published The Nice Book. She's also got another book that was incredible, and she used to write for Christianity Today. And we had a friendship, and I remember one of the conversations she said, why aren't you stewarding this message that God's given you to embolden women? I said, well, I am stewarding it. I'm leading Polished. I preach all over the place. I am. And she said, you know, I want to challenge you to think about, am I stewarding it in all the ways that I possibly could? And I said, well, you know, I had all the excuses. I don't need to build a platform. I'm not looking to get into that. I have the career I've always wanted, working with young professional women. I've never really gotten paid. You know, it's not about money, follower, any of that. And she said, I just want to push back one more time and say, I think you should be stewarding this message and thoughtfully consider, are you doing that? And at the time I was like, yes. And then the Holy Spirit kind of connected my conversation with Jenny, my conversation with Sharon. And then the tipping point, Merritt, was my father passing away 2 years ago. And so he took his life and had struggled with depression, suicidal tendencies, a lifetime of substance abuse. And I think when any kind of trauma, tragedy happens in life, you get really introspective. You know, is my life the way I want it? Life is short. Am I the spouse I want to be? Am I the mother I want to be? So I got really introspective, and part of that led me back to that conversation with Jenny Allen, the conversation with Sharon Miller. And so I put together a book proposal, and I'll tell you, people reach out all the time, like, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? I Googled it. None of my author friends sent me like some sort of template until I had put something initially together. And then I did send it to them saying, is this kind of what I should be doing? And they're like, yes. But I Googled how to put together a book proposal, and I just started. And then I Googled how to find a literary agent. I just Googled it all. And thankfully I did have people in the industry that I could reach out to and say, hey, I just read this article about how to find an agent. and I'm thinking about reaching out to so-and-so before I do. Is there any reason I shouldn't? Because I know you've worked with them. And, but yeah, that kind of answers your question about, was it even on my radar? No, but that's how I ended up writing a book.
I love it. And so you mentioned to me in an email, just kind of this doing it afraid. And clearly, as you've had kind of these two, we'll say, gentle confrontations, mm-hmm. talk about what that was like to step forward out of the safe place and do it afraid.
I'm still doing it afraid every single day, you know, getting on this podcast, even we're friends. I've got a lot of trust in you. I'm confident in the message I'm giving today. And still I felt trepidation about, oh Lord, I hope I say the right thing and don't mess up my words. And so doing it afraid is kind of like my life theme. and I hope it's an encouragement to your listeners that I fail a lot. Those failures just don't make social media, but the book is a good example in that, the first time I sent the first time I got the proposal together, when I did send it off to friends for feedback, they were like, oh, this needs a lot of work. And that was the first like injury to my ego of, oh, well, I followed the template I found on Google. And so the second was reaching out to agents and pitching myself and saying, you know, I'm interested in maybe writing a book and here's my book proposal. And the first person to email me back, he said, I would love to work with you, but no one will read this book. And then at the end of the email, he said, if I've injured you emotionally, don't take it personally. I tend to just be really blunt. Wow. And I kept that email. Yeah. I was like, oh my word, what in the world is this industry? And he really thought he was giving me a compliment. I want to work with you. I see potential, but no one will read this message. And my response back was, I'm not really looking to become a writer or an author or have a platform. I'm really looking to steward this particular message. And so if it's not through the book, a book, that's okay. I'll blog about it. I'll do something else with it. I'm just called to steward this particular message. And I'll say that that's not how everybody approaches being an author or writing a book. And I'm not even sure it's the right way to do it, quite frankly. That's just my story, is that I wasn't looking to be an author. I'm trying to steward a message. And I thought this could be one avenue to do it. And so it took a little while for me to dust off myself and try another agent. And so when I did find an agent that was interested and we met, you know, then you start the long process of editing that book proposal, because it's not up to par. And that's their job, is to help you get it into shape so that it's, you know, really enticing to a potential publisher. But yeah, the do it afraid part, it starts from day one. I mean, you open up that Word document and the cursor's blinking for a book proposal and you're like, I need to do laundry. Right. There's a lot of other things I should be doing with my day to day. And probably the big one for a first-time author and a rookie like me is just, will I be well-received in the industry? What business do I even have doing this? And I think ultimately I came down to, the answer was none. I don't have any business doing this, but I believe 2 Corinthians chapter 3, that we are, or chapter 4, says we're not made competent ministers of the gospel through anything of ourselves. It says, Paul says, instead, our adequacy it comes from God. It comes through the Holy Spirit. And so there was a lot of relief where I wasn't burdened anymore, merit of like, will I make it or not? It was more, if you're stewarding a message and the Holy Spirit equips you to do this, it'll work out. And if it doesn't, I'll just keep on stewarding this message a different way. And so for me, that's doing it afraid. I take some of the pressure off.
I love that. That's really, really helpful, because I don't know. I think we just live in this world where it feels like, well, it's up to us, you know? Mm-hmm. and if I don't X, Y, Z, whatever, get on it, it's not going to happen. And truly, I mean, if you're given a a task and work to be done, then there is work to be done, but it's not by our own strength. And we are not the ones to sustain it. That I'm sure every day you have to get up and decide to, you know, type words for your book. But I love that we aren't the be-all end-all of the source of it all, that the great sustainer, the God of the universe directs our steps in that. And I've got to pull that verse too. Like, oh, love it.
Yeah, it's quickly becoming my life verse. It used to be something different, but for the last 3 years, I just keep coming back to that. 2 Corinthians 3:4-5. And Paul asks the question, like, who's competent for this work? He asks the question, and we're supposed to answer, nobody. Nobody's equipped to do this. And then he spends a whole chapter and a half saying, you know, where we find boldness, you know, where we find adequacy, like how we move past the imposter syndrome. It is to find all of our power and identity in God, lead all the results up to him, and just to every day do the next right thing. You know, as Emily P. Freeman would say, just do the next right thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so the next right thing for you was you found an agent, you started working on that book proposal, and then what happened?
So then the agent, you know, their job is they already have relationships in the industry with publishing houses. And so their job is to get your proposal in front of them and to pitch you. And once they do, you get potentially, if you get interest in an offer, they usually want to interview you. And I didn't know that makes total sense. It is like a job interview. They want to hear your heart and your passion. They want to hear you talk about the book, not just read what you had to say about your idea. And so that was an interesting process. And I think I gained a lot of respect for the industry. I think as an outsider, I used to almost demonize, the gatekeepers and the publicity and the platforms, and that's, you know, the sales, and this is anti what I see Jesus telling us to do. But the more I got in it, I realized, oh, this is just like the body of Christ. We're collaborating together on a project. We all have to know that this is what we're supposed to be doing. And it is like a job interview. And so then, you know, once you find a publishing house who's interested, your agent represents you. They are the go-between. They help you get a deal that is going to serve both parties, you and that publishing house. And ultimately, it's about finding which team am I going to work really well with and who will help me steward this message, who believes in it and will help me steward it. And so I'm so blessed to be with W Publishing. They're a part of Thomas Nelson and Zondervan and HarperCollins. Those are all kind of grouped together. They're all the same company. And I'm with a very a smaller house called W Publishing. I love the materials they produce, and that was important to me, that I would be in a house where they're producing authors that I aspire to be like. And I'm just so blessed. I mean, honestly, Merritt, they have been so nothing but amazing to me. But the writing process is where it got really hard. My writing skills were, I think, below average for a first-time author. And so I had to rewrite the book 3 times. So that's 60,000 words 3 times in a year. And I was so demoralized. I truly, and it wasn't anything my publisher said. So I want that to be so clear, that it was quite the opposite. She was encouraging and uplifting. But ultimately by round 3 of, hey, it still needs a lot of work and it just isn't there yet, I hired a coach. And so this isn't like a ghostwriter. That's a different type of thing. And it's not your editor. That's a different thing. But a coach is someone who helps you formalize almost like an outline. What are you going to write about in this chapter? Why are you going to write it? And then once you do write it, they're like, I loved it, but I wish you had given me another story to illustrate this point. And then you go back and read it and go, oh yeah, I didn't even illustrate that point. And then you write and you send it over to them and they're like, oh, see, now this chapter feels complete. So they weren't giving me words to say or telling me what to write, but they're coaching you just like if you were to go to the gym and you had a personal trainer. And that personal trainer is going to be like, you know, give me 5 more reps. So that's what they did. And I think that I can't wait to share that part of my story. If I write more in the future, I'm always going to use a coach from the beginning, because I kind of went to her in desperation. And I'm like, I have a coach for every other area of my life. I have a spiritual director. I have a licensed professional counselor. I have a board of directors for Polished. Why would I think that I could do this without that? I don't know. I think for maybe people who have been a writer their whole lives, you probably don't need a coach. But for someone like me, who's been stewarding a message a different way through events and preaching and speaking, I really needed help. So that's a little bit about my story.
So, and this would be like a writing coach. Is that like specific? Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, otherwise you're just kind of stuck in your own head, and it seems reasonable that you would rewrite your book three times, you know, like how do you even get outside of yourself when that's all you've got? So that does seem super helpful. And someone who's like on your side in the process as well. So you really,
I use Patty Crowley Brown. That's her name. And she is incredible. So I highly recommend, if you need coaching for any of your writing, reach out to Patty. She knows what's up.
Awesome. So you're a few months into now the launch, and what has all of that been like? Has it been what you expected, or any surprises along the way?
Oh, Merritt, it's so hard from day to day, because one day I'll be so up and elated. Like, can you believe this book is out in the wild? Like, sometimes I hold it and I'm like, this can't even be real. Can't be real. Can't be real. And then other days I'm like, you know, self-loathing. Oh, this isn't selling well, and I don't know why I did this. And oh, I found an error, or I wish I had said something differently. And so it's really a day-to-day journey, but, I wouldn't say there are any surprises, other than I thought the hard part mentally and emotionally was past me in the writing process. But I have found, even though I got kind of demoralized in the writing process, I found that I really struggled with some insecurities the week the book launched that I did not anticipate. And I think it was because people would tell me, oh, I'm reading it. And I was like, okay, don't read it, maybe. I was just like, that's kind of the point. And so I felt a little exposed, let's put it that way. And I'm really grateful for it, the traditional publishing method, because you have so many eyes on it that help you really refine the message. I can see how if I had just put it out there on my own, I may have overshared. And I'm really grateful that there were times when my editor would come back and say, I want you to prayerfully consider this is what you want to put in there. And they weren't like stifling my voice. It wasn't anything like that. It's all positive. It was just, I think, a lot of wisdom.
I've never thought about it that way. And I've heard writers talk about, especially with a printed book, like you can't go back. It's not like a blog post where you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. And you can just go delete, you know, but with a book, like it is on paper for good. And there's thousands upon thousands of copies all over the place. Never taking that back. Oh, that's really helpful.
For sure. Yeah. The heat's on, you know, you're like, this got to be right.
And so now, is there like a pressure for a what's next, or like what do you feel like you do now after publishing a book and it's out in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had to just go back to that phrase that Sharon Miller used with me so many times. It's been like an anchor to my soul. And I know that that's Jesus. I know that he's the one that just keeps whispering to me, steward the message. So now that the book's out, you can get really caught up in, is it selling? Are people reading it? Do they like it? Do they hate it? Are people blowing me up on the internet and, you know, shredding me? None of that's really happening. Like, it's not selling. It's not a blockbuster selling book, and no one's tearing me apart on the internet. So none of those fears have been realized. I think it's more so just every day coming back to, I didn't get in this for any other reason than to steward a message. Am I doing that? that's changed how I've been marketing the book and the book launch. And so everything I'm doing is motivated by, will this help people? And will this help them understand the core message? Because there's definitely a way that authors can market themselves to build a platform. And by sheer numbers, when you widen and deepen how many people follow you, that will result that, I mean, that will correspond with sales. Like, it's just mathematical, you know, if you go from having 1,000 genuine followers to 10,000 on Instagram, you are going to sell more books. But I think the way I'm choosing to pursue this is to not think about those kind of analytics, but rather when I go to Instagram to talk about a 21-day prayer guide, that is a way that I'm promoting the book. But it felt really genuine to me because I did sit down and write 21 days of prayer about this book and how the messages in the book come from scripture and how we could pray to the Holy Spirit to help us realize these, like them to become reality. And so I'm praying right now, Merritt, just that I keep that for any career I might have in writing, where everything I do is motivated by, will this help people, as opposed to, will this get clicks? And that's a hard line, because like part of doing the messages is making sure people hear about it. But I think there's a fear there. Could I lose myself? Could I lose my grounding? And I hope not. So I'm counting on people like you and my friends to say, hey, I just feel like this is a departure from who I know you to be and your character. And this felt weird on social media, or this felt weird in your emails or whatever. And then there's the flip side of, you don't want to be judged, but you also, like, this is part of my job now, is to steward this message. So yeah, there's all that wrapped up into it. And I'm starting to work on book number 2. And probably the biggest fear that I'm challenged with is, do I have anything else to say? I think I do. I'm deep in research, loving what I'm reading in the Bible, and can't wait to teach people what I'm learning. But there's definitely a feeling of like, will I ever have anything else to say?
And that's where you go back to Paul's words.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like a cycle.
That you're not really competent and you don't really have anything else to say but God, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's exciting though, to hear that there is potentially a book number 2. Very sweet. But before we go there, I would love to give you a moment just to talk about what that message is. I mean, we talked about the Azer. Am I saying mm-hmm. that right?
Azer. I don't know. I think it's Azer.
Okay, Azer. So we talked about that. But if you, not if, here, I'm giving you a moment to share with the listener what that message is, what you want women to hear from No More Holding Back.
Yeah, what I want them to know is that I really struggled with something, and I wonder if they can relate. And if they can relate, my book is for you. I used to gender the greatest commandment. And so I want to unpack that. I used to read the great commandment, which Jesus mentions in Mark chapter 12, verse 30 through 31. And maybe y'all have heard it. It's to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love one another as you love yourself. And I used to look at heart, soul, mind, and strength, and I gendered it. I divided it. I used to think that loving God with your heart and soul was women's work. And I used to think that loving God with our mind and strength was men's work. And that is not how Jesus prioritized loving him. He wants men and women to be all in for Jesus, all in. And I was really tempering my enthusiasm for Jesus, holding back loving him with some of my spiritual gifts, because I was worried that I was crossing this invisible line between heart and soul and mind and strength. And so I remember journaling one day and looking at the great commandment and going, God, thank you for prioritizing, because my life is so full. And there are so many words in this Bible, like, bottom line it for me, Jesus. What do I need to be doing? And, you know, he says it, love him, love God, and do it with your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I started journaling heart, soul, mind, strength. And I circled heart and soul. And I was like, God, I think I'm more used to doing this. And then I looked at Mind and Strength and I was like, I have a mind that I love to use. I have a lot of strength in Jesus, but I do not feel comfortable loving God with mind and strength. I kind of feel like the guys should take care of that. And then I started to do this deep dive of why on earth, as an image bearer of God, would I think it's okay not to love God with all of my mind and strength? And then I remembered this story. I tell it in the intro. I was sitting in a seminary class, and the professor that day asked a question. He said, what do we think about women learning about Jesus? Not leading, no titles, none of that, none of that. It was just women learning about Jesus. And I raised my hand. It was like a reflex. I wish I hadn't, but I'm glad I did. But I raised my hand and I was like, I'm afraid. I am scared to learn too much about Jesus because I am a woman. And after I said that, one of my peers, he turned his body to me and he started yelling. He said, just stop, just stop. And he said, you can learn too much about Jesus because you're a woman. And when you do, you are a threat to the local church and you are a threat to the institution of marriage. I mean, you just like jaw-dropping moment. And of course, the professor defended my honor, silenced that student, gave us a much-needed bathroom break. Like, he really was the hero of the story. But I ran over to the bathroom, and can you believe it? That student followed me to the women's restroom, got one foot in the door, and pried open the door. And he said, I've got one question for you. Why are you even here? And I was bawling and I said, I'm here for the same reason you are. Like, I'm here to study the Bible. And he left. I had a good, ugly cry. I like wiped off all my mascara smears and went back to class kind of wounded. But you know what, Merritt? It's taken me a long time to realize that he and I, that student and I, we thought the same thing. And it took him yelling it at me for me to realize how wackadoodle my theology was about women learning about Jesus, applying their mind to the scriptures, and then using the Holy Spirit's power in their strength to change the world. And so a lot of women hear that story and they're like, what is his name? Like, who is this guy? And they're like taking off their earrings. Like, I want to defend your honor. I want to fight this guy. Like, where is he now? And my answers are always the same. I don't know where he is. I never knew his name. I never really saw him again. And he's really not the point of the story. The story I tell in the book is he revealed to me that I used to think loving God with mind and strength was guy's work. And maybe if he hadn't yelled it at me, I wouldn't have realized how strange it is, how evil it is, really, to divide the great commandment and to assume that some of it doesn't apply to my life. And so I spend the whole book, the first section of the book, I talk about the messages that hold women back from loving God with their all. And so I talk about messages like women can't be trusted to learn and lead. Women are easily deceived. Women should be in subservient, you know, support roles. Marriage will be my greatest joy. Motherhood will be my highest calling. I talk through all of these messages that I've heard that kept me from loving God with my all. And then in section two, I talk about the great commandment and I do a word study of heart, soul, mind, and strength from Genesis to Revelation and what it really looks like to be all in for Jesus. And then I end the book talking about the second great commandment to love God, love others as we love ourselves. And so really, the book's about the first and second greatest commandment, but the title is No More Holding Back. And the goal is to embolden women to move past some of these messages that they hear, to find their worth in God, and then to be willing to serve him anywhere he leads them. And as you can tell, I get real fired up about it because there are people who are rallying around this message now that are like, I can relate to this story.
Thank you. Thank you for writing the book and for taking the time to kind of unpack that a little bit for us, for going through that dreadful situation in your class. Oh my gosh. But it does sometimes take that like thing or person yelling in your face to realize, oh, I need to think about this a little bit more deeply. Oh, awesome. Okay. So obviously we can find your book wherever books are sold, but you mentioned also you have a Bible study and DVDs. Am I missing anything that people might want to know about?
No, that's it. I'm so hyped about the study guide. You know, they, the industry really knows that you're more likely to buy a book than you are curriculum. But I am so excited about the curriculum because it gets women into the Word, and it's a 6-week study. So it's perfect for a small group, like a group at a church. You could even do it as a whole women's ministry for your church. And I work directly with Church Source. So if people go to a big church and they've got women that gather and need curriculum, I can help them get it through Church Source.
Awesome. Okay. So we'll put links to how to get a hold of you and where people can get the book in the show notes. So we're talking here in the fall, but this is going to go live in December. So this is a great, if you're thinking about the new year and, you know, where God has you for 2020, this would be a great Bible study. Small church, big church. That's awesome. So we're about to the end of our time, and I just would love for you to close us out talking about, really, as you look at yourself and who you are today compared to 3 years ago, the last time we talked, how would you say that God has changed you in this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you take my father's suicide plus launching a book, there's been a really big two major shifts. One took a lot away from my life. And, you know, I talk about my father's struggles and his death to normalize that this is a reality for a lot of people who struggle with depression, substance abuse, mental health, and have suicidal tendencies. And so that took a lot away from me, Merritt, and I won't get it back until God comes back to make a new heaven and a new earth. And so I've got victory in Jesus. I see a counselor. I'm working through my grief. So it's not that. It's just that fundamentally I'm different because that my father was taken from me, and I won't get him back until we're reunited. In the new heaven and the new earth. So that's a big seismic shift. And I tell people I have less capacity than I used to. I don't know if I'll ever get that capacity back. So I gained a lot of compassion, and I rounded out some edges in my personhood through that tragedy. But it also took some capacity out of me that 3 years ago, I was wound up tight, ready to do the next big thing. And now I just feel so sustained day to day by God that I'm okay with doing less and less and less, and maybe doing it more thoughtfully, more in a more grounded way. And those sound like new agey words, but for me, it really comes from the scriptures. And then the other seismic shift is gaining this new way to steward my message as an author. And so the two just seem to be on polar opposites of the spectrum. And sometimes it's just how life is. You know, some of the best things in our life happen when other places in our life are falling apart. And so I felt that really acutely the last 3 years that, you know, if you didn't know about what was going on in my family or how I've been struggling through grief, you could see one lens of my life and think, wow, things are just going awesome. But we know that's not how anybody's life goes, where it's a combination of highs and lows.
Always, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, friend, thank you so much for being here today, for sharing just some intimate parts of your story. And I just appreciate you and so grateful to get a chance to talk to you today and reconnect.
Well, the work you're doing is so valuable to the kingdom of God. And so thank you for just being a voice for so many women that are listening in. And I love what you're doing, Erin.
If you have ever struggled with figuring out how to steward a dream, this was the episode for you. First, I just love Kat so much and her heart for women. And side note, if you live in Texas or Oklahoma and you've never heard of Polished Ministry, I highly recommend you look it up and learn more about what they're doing to serve and support women who know and love God and those who don't know Him yet. I'm so grateful to Kat for returning to the show this year, for sharing so vulnerably about her experiences and what has shaped, grown, and challenged her in the years since we last talked here on the podcast, and then sharing what she's doing to steward this message God's given her to share. So thank you, Kat. I loved having you on. I'm so grateful and appreciate what you brought to the show today. Here are my takeaways that I really don't want you to miss from the interview, and I'm sure you grabbed onto some of these as well, but my first one, number one, is that whole question of how do I steward this? So for you, maybe that's not a message like it is for Kat. Maybe it is, but maybe you'd say, how do I steward this calling or this mission or this experience or this life that God has given me? How is God calling you to steward it? And I loved her perspective on how it's not about the sales or the numbers related to her book, but it's about the message. It's about this thing that God has given her and what she's going to do with it, that her focus is there and that, you know, we're not called to hide what God has given us. And when we stop hiding, when we step out of that, the rest will come and become clear. Okay, takeaway number two. This was big. Listen to the wisdom of the people in your life, the people who see you and know you. In her case, she said Jenny Allen didn't really know her. But you think about it, and I'm sure she thinks about it, that she might never have written this book or stewarded this message in the way that she is if it wasn't for those two women giving her some gentle nudges to look honestly at herself, her role, her message, and then encourage her to act. So it might look different for you also, but my question for you is, do you have people like that in your life? The ones who, when you feel afraid, are going to help knock you out of that mind space and get you going again toward your dream? Do you have people who will speak truth with love and walk alongside you as you do that? And if you don't, what might you do in the coming year to change that? Okay, finally, takeaway number three, that she's still doing it afraid. And so keep doing it. If that's you, if you're afraid and you don't know what's going to come next and you're not sure if you can handle it, keep going. Kat talked about facing the criticism and the challenges in her writing, but not letting that stop her. Instead, she hired a writing coach. She got the help she needed to keep going. And now she says that she would never do it alone again. So what can you learn by doing it afraid? You learn what you need, right? You learn where you need to grow. And you get to lean into the Lord to give you what you need in that process or to help you find who you need to walk with you through it. And I loved her reference to 2 Corinthians, and I looked it up. It's actually chapter 3, verse 5, that our adequacy comes from God, that that's not something that we have to come up with on our own. And woo, doesn't that take the pressure off? I mean, I love that. That I'm sure I've read that verse before, but I so need that and want to remember that in my day to day, that our adequacy comes from Him, that we don't have to create it on our own. Okay, I keep getting really fun reviews of the podcast from you. Thank you all so much for taking the time to leave a review. Here's a 5-star from Alicia B, and she says, love, 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 love this podcast. It's always such a refreshing reminder of how to follow the dream God has given. It's not about just going and doing big things just for the heck of it, but it really challenges the listener to listen to Christ, follow where He's leading, and keep Him at the forefront and center of it all. Such a good podcast. I highly recommend. Ah, friend, thank you. Thank you for those kind words. And I do hope that it is all of those things. So I appreciate you taking the time to leave a review. And you can too. Just head on over to Apple Podcasts and iTunes and click on rate and review this podcast. I would love to hear your thoughts. I hear often from listeners who write to me about the impact of these stories on their lives. And
on their ability to take the next step toward their dream. I have loved watching you all flourish in pursuing what God has made you for. So continue to tag me in social media. I'm maybe not going to be around in the month of December. Not maybe. I'm for sure not going to be around on social media in the month of December. But keep sharing what you're doing. I would love to be a part of that. And if you haven't shared yet, do it. Please show me what God is teaching you as a result of listening to this podcast and pursuing your dream. And either way, if the show is making a difference for you in your dream, I would love to invite you to make a commitment to support the podcast in the new year. So while this show is always free to you, it's not free to produce, and it's definitely a labor of love, but I cannot tell you what it has meant to me in a season of need for our family, really most of 2019, to have the financial support of listeners to keep Devoted Dreamers on the airwaves. Seriously, God knew that we would need this support when I launched my Patreon page back in January of 2017. I had no idea how much I would need it. So if you already give, thank you. And if you don't and you want to know more, it's so easy. Just go visit patreon.com/devoteddreamerspodcast. That's patreon.com. Or you can click the support this podcast button in your app or scroll down to the become a patron button in the show description. Seriously, it's so easy. And I really want to, find more ways to reward you for your involvement in 2020. So I'd love to hear what would feel rewarding to you as a patron of the show. And if you're ready to connect with other like-minded dreamers, we would love to meet you in the Facebook group. It is a great place to find community with women who love Jesus and believe he has given them a dream to pursue. We're over there sharing our challenges and our successes. I hope you will join us in the Devoted Dreamers Insiders group. You will find the show notes for this episode at meritonsa.com/podcast/136. That's where you can connect with Kat, find all the ways to reach out to her, and grab a copy of her book, No More Holding Back. Well, friends, this is really it for me for 2019. It's the end of season 6. And I kind of can't believe it. 136 episodes, including 10 solo episodes that'll become an audiobook next year. And little side note, I kept calling it an ebook in the last solo episode I did, but it's an audiobook. Trust me. But the show has reached more than 110,000 downloads and still growing every day. And weekly, if not daily, women are telling me what listening to the podcast has done for their willingness to pursue a dream. I don't know why I never did this before, but I just started a file to hold on to the stories I get from listeners about this. So if you have one, I would seriously love to hear it. So the new year and a new season is just around the bend. It's seriously going to be here before we know it. But as I have reflected on this past year, on 2019, as I've reviewed the listener surveys from last April, I can look back and say we've really tackled the topics of identity and fear and how those relate to our dream. And as I look forward, so many of the guests I'm thinking about and talking to for 2020 have something in common, something I didn't really notice was coming out, but it's a theme, and that is rest. It's letting go of overwhelm and hustle and figuring out what it looks like to do less and to still have a dream. So my prayer for you and for me over the holidays and for the year to come is that we can all really, really focus in on the things that matter, that we can say no to the things that aren't the top one or two things on the list, and that the Lord will make clear to us what steps we are to take next, knowing that the finish line is with Him in heaven. And we don't know when or how we'll arrive, but let's let go of that idea that there's some sort of finish line here on this earth that we have to arrive at and that we have to hustle towards. In fact, Lord, I just ask right now for everyone listening that you would just help us to pause and take a breath over the holidays to find space in our heart and our mind and our soul so that we can listen to you and what you have for us in the new year. Merry Christmas, my sweet friends. I pray it is a beautiful season of rest and hope and joy for you and your loved ones. That's it for today. Thank you so much for joining me in this conversation. And wherever you are with your God-shaped dreams, may you have the courage to take one step toward their realization today.